So I had this really sweet video of like a dog who jumps off cliffs. So awesome, but I can't show it to you because we don't have screens. But you need to Google it later. He's like this big and he jumps off really high cliffs, and it's just awesome to see dogs jump off cliffs. And you're like, why, Rob? Why were you going to show us that video? Well, let me start with this story instead. Okay, are you ready? Are you listening? Are you paying attention? I'm about to embarrass myself. Does anyone want to see me embarrassed? Anybody? A few of you? Okay, so here's my embarrassing story for the night. So some of you might have heard this a long time ago. I think I shared this with a few of you. But I once went to this pool because I lived up north, and like we don't just have beaches and all that like fun stuff because it's cold. So we'd go to these pools. So anyway, there's this pool we would go to. I went with my buddies, and we specifically would go to this pool because there was a really hot chick that was like the lifeguard. All right, so yeah, I'm just being honest. So we'd go, and we're like, she was so pretty. So we would go. I know I can't say hot chick nowadays, but she was a hot chick. I don't know how else to describe her, but she was really pretty. And so we'd go, and she was sitting on one of those really tall wooden chairs, you know, like lifeguards have, and she'd oversee and like blow her whistle and tell people to like not be dangerous. And we would just stand there and be like, we didn't swim, we just like look at her, you know. So we went, and this one day I was gonna get her attention. So I decide I'm gonna go up to like the really high dive board. Any of you guys done like the high dive? None of you? All right, well, I wasn't as scared as you guys. So I went up on this high dive, and I was like, everyone that went up there, she would have to tell them when they could dive off. It was like a thing. It was like a rule. So I knew at least this way she would talk to me, right? So I was going to get her attention. So I climb up there. I go all the way up on this thing, dude. And when I get to the top, all my buddies are down there. They look like they're about this big, and they're all just like looking at me like, he's going to kill himself, you know, like waiting for me to die on this high dive. So I can see them like laughing at me. But then I look over, and as I'm standing up there on the top of the world, and everyone looks like ants way down below me, it was worth it when I gazed her way. And she looked at me, and she said, you can go. And I was like, she talked to me, right? I look at my buddies, I was like, ha, ha, ha. So I go out, and I walk out to the end of the board. Now, I'm just like a short, little, chubby, round guy, and I'm like not built for high dive. And I go out there, and I'm standing there, and I'm looking down, and my knees are clacking, and I'm like, what did I just do? Now this girl is going to see what a big sissy I am, and I'm not going to be able to do this, and then she's never going to want to talk to me again. And so I'm standing there, and I just go for it. It's one of those things where, like, you can't go back down. It's like I'm going to climb back down the ladder. How embarrassing would that be, right? So I just go, and I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know if it's going to be a dive or a jump or a belly flop or what is happening. I just go, and it's just like, what other choice do I have? The next thing I remember is just getting dragged out of the pool. I don't know how I landed. I don't know what happened. I just know that somehow some people pulled me out of the pool, right? So I must have had a bad landing. And as I'm laying there, like on the side of the pool, and people are all around me, I noticed that the cement on the side of the pool was extra cold. It was colder than it should have been. And when they pulled me out of the pool, they got me, but my bathing suit stayed in the pool. So when I look, it's just floating on the water, just floating away from me. I'm like, no, come back, you know? And then I look up, and there she is, with her hand over her eyes, just like laughing at me. Oh, my little heart crushed. I was like, gonna try to impress this girl, and here I did the exact opposite. And it was one of those things that, here's what I want to get across to you. When you're standing on the edge, maybe you've been to a waterfall. Any of you ever jump off a waterfall? And even if it's not that high, there's something about being right on the edge with your toes hanging off. You know what I'm talking about? And you're like looking down, and you have to count. And maybe you have a friend who's like counting for you because you just don't have the courage to take that jump. And if you're the guy waiting, you just want to be like, all right, you know, like, there you go. Let me help you. Because it's this moment where you have to collect all of your courage, all of your energy, and just say, I'm doing this, right? There's no way to be halfway in. You've probably seen YouTube videos of people who have like changed their mind halfway on the jump, and they turn around and hit the board and bounce on everything on the way down and splat on the ground. It's not a good scene. You need to commit. You need to go all the way. You need to be all in and just go for it and jump. And that's what I did that day, and it didn't work out too well for me. But hopefully, hopefully if you ever do it, it'll work out better for you. But here's what I did right. I committed, you know, I went all in. And tonight we're going to be in a story. We're still in Big Choices and Little Moments in our series, talking about how sometimes the most humble moments that don't seem like a big deal actually contain the biggest choices of our lives. And there's no way really for you to know other than just to be faithful with every moment the Lord gives you. And we looked at the story of David and how, I'm sorry, not David, of Joseph, and how Joseph went through this ordeal in his life where he started off getting thrown into a pit by his own brothers and then sold into slavery into Egypt and like all these things. But in the end, Joseph's little choice of just obeying his dad and going when his dad told him to go, he ends up being one of the most powerful men on the planet, saving his family from famine, his people from famine, and then eventually through his brother Judah, Jesus is born, who saves the whole world because of his decision in a little teeny moment, a humble, dusty moment. And so tonight we're looking at Ruth. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ruth, but Ruth is a pretty amazing woman in Scripture. And so we're going to look at her life and some things that has happened to Ruth that will help us make big, big choices in little moments. So if you'll read with me, we're in Ruth chapter 1. We don't have screens, so hopefully your phone or Bible is with you tonight. Got a couple Bibles in the back if you need to grab like a paper Bible. Ruth chapter 1, starting in verse 1. Here's what it says. It says, in the days when the judges ruled. Now stop right there. We'll just walk through this together. So this is about 1,000 years before Jesus. This is after Joseph. The people of Israel have been freed from Egypt at this point. And now they're in this time period where they're being ruled by God through these different guys who's given authority and women who have authority over them to help them and guide them called judges. So it's this really weird, interesting time in Israel's history. And that's where Ruth is. That's where she's living. And it says that there was a famine in the land. Now, this is a different famine. This isn't the same one we just talked about with Joseph. This is a couple hundred years later, and now there's a famine again. It's interesting that God seems to always show up during the hard times. Here, another famine hits, and people are in a time of desperation and wondering, how are we going to survive this? And you know what? God shows up again to reveal his power and love. It's like he likes to use hard times in your life to show up and say, here I am. You're not going to believe what I'm about to do for you. That's encouraging for me because when I hit hard times, my first thought is, Lord, what are you doing? Like, how am I going to get through this? But I know by looking at Scripture, it's usually during that hard time that God wants to teach me something incredible. And my heart might hurt. I might be aching inside. I might have some really difficult circumstances around me. But I can be sure that God's going to use that for something awesome. He's going to show me his power and his love if I'll just hold on and trust him during that hard time. So there's famine going on. And it says that a man of Bethlehem in Judah. Do you hear that? This guy is from this place of Bethlehem in Judah. Now, Judah is the name of the brother of Joseph, the one who kind of like was the head of the little band there during the story of Joseph. And God has used them and blessed them. And now there is a thriving place of people because of Joseph's little decision that's called Judah. It's this people group that's thriving, and it's right here. So we're seeing God's blessing in huge ways, all because Joseph said yes to his dad when he asked him to go check on his brothers. What a small decision. What a tiny chore to be asked to do. And that teeny act of obedience, just saying yes to his dad and obeying, turns out to save an entire group of people. And now there's a nation called Judah. That's incredible. And so it says this. He went to sojourn, which means travel, in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites and from Bethlehem and Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. So this guy named Elimelech took his wife and his sons, and he said, there's famine. We can't eat here, so we need to go find food. So we're going to go to this country really close called Moab, because we've heard that Moab actually has some food there. And so if we travel over to Moab, then we can find some food and survive this thing. So he takes them and they go. It says, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died. And she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, not Oprah, Orpah. And the name of the other, Ruth. So they get there. And as they're living there, this guy dies. And so here's his wife and his two sons living now trying to survive in a time of famine in a foreign land without him. The situation seems like it's getting worse, doesn't it? Now, I looked up what Ruth means. That's one of these daughter-in-laws. Her name means friend. And it's really cool. Remember that, because as we talk through the rest of the story, it's important to remember that her name means friend. All right? It says this. They lived there about 10 years. Ready for this part? And both Mahlon and Chilion died. Whoa. So the dudes just get married. They don't even have kids yet. And then they die too. So all the men of this family that are supposed to be out working and providing for these women and their families are all dead. So they take these women and they go to this place, and they're in a foreign land in the middle of a famine, and they all die. Imagine what Naomi was thinking at the time. God, where have you brought me? What is going on? How are we ever going to survive this? Man, to be in their place. You know, but then we see this lady named Ruth, one of her daughter-in-laws, whose name is Friend. And it's interesting that the story now starts to take shape around her. Because, like, Israelites usually didn't write stories about people who were from pagan lands. And she was a Moabite, which means she served this god named Chemosh. And Chemosh was a pagan god who was a false god. And she comes and she marries this guy who's a Jewish man who serves the one true God. And so for the story to be based around Ruth in this moment and to show her this way, she must have had something real going on inside. And as we look at her and we see what she's about to do, I think we're going to realize she did have something awesome happening. It says they lived there about 10 years. They both died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Doesn't this seem like a little moment? Like what we've been talking about, where just like, how could things get worse? Imagine you get dragged off to some place, that some country that you've never heard of. You don't speak their language. You're just going, trusting your family who takes you, and then you're the only one left. All of a sudden, all the people who are supposed to be providing for you and taking care of you die, and now you're stuck there. Like, doesn't it seem like one of those moments where you're like, how will we ever get out of this? This seems like a pit moment like Joseph had, where they're looking and going, how in the world does this turn out for our good? There's this guy, John Mark Comer, who says this, and I like what he says. He says, when you're in a period of suffering, flip the question from how can I get out of this to what can I get out of this? So as they're sitting in this moment, this pit where they're going, how do we survive? What he's saying to do is, instead of asking, how do I get out of it? How do I survive this? How do I climb out of this pit or get out of this situation? Instead, ask, what can I get out of this? Like we said earlier, it's because God uses these hard times to teach you the biggest lessons, to show you how much he loves you, to show you how strong he is and how much he cares about you. And so his advice is for us to stop and say, God, what do you have for me? What do you want to show me right now? Why am I in this mess? I'm not trying to just struggle out of it on my own and get out of here and get safe. I'm going to stop and go, God, I want to learn about you. I know this hurts right now. I know this seems really difficult right now. But will you use it to show me who you are? Will you use this pit I'm sitting in to show me how much you love me? This heartache, this brokenness I'm feeling, this terrible situation. God, will you reveal yourself to me through it? Make me be patient. Let me sit here in it for a moment instead of trying to rush out of it. Say, God, what do you have for me right now? Listen, y'all, I know some of you guys are going through some hard stuff right now. I know some of y'all are in pits or in moments of famine, and you're just like, how am I going to get out of this? There's some broken hearts in this room tonight. Can I encourage you, as we look at the life of Ruth, to say, listen, don't try to just climb out of the pit so fast. Would you stop and instead say, God, what are you trying to teach me? God, will you show me your love? Show me who you are right now. Use this pain I'm feeling for something good, to draw me closer to you, to make my faith in you stronger. Don't waste the heartache. Don't waste the pain. Don't waste the pit that you're in, but instead beg God to do something with it in your life. Because like we saw with Joseph, that pit might actually be a miracle. It might be the very thing that will rescue you and change your life for the good if you trust God and let him do his work. I'm sorry if your heart hurts tonight. I am so sorry if you're heartbroken or you're in some mess. You don't know how it's going to work out. But before you climb out too fast, will you just look to God and say, I trust you. Right here. Right in this mess. Right in this pain. Lord, do something. It says, so she set out. She arose with her two daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So this lady Naomi tries to climb out of the pit. She tries to rush off. She says, hey, listen, I heard there's food and it's back in our country. So we're going to head back. Let's all get up and go. She didn't know what else to do. And so she's trying to get them back to their home, her homeland. But her homeland, listen, is not the homeland of these two daughter-in-laws. They're from Moab. They're home. They're like right down the road from mom and dad. They can go down the block there and then just go home. They don't have to stay with her and go to this foreign land to them, which is her home. And so she says, hey, we're going. We're going to set out because I know there's some food there. God's blessing them. It says, but Naomi said to her two daughter-in-laws, go. Return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as he's dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them and they lifted up their voices and wept. This seems like an easy decision, right? Naomi's like, hey, listen, you guys, you're from here. Just go home. Go back to your parents' house. Find a husband. I pray that God would bless you. You don't have to feel any shame. Don't be embarrassed like you abandoned me. It's like she's letting them off the hook. She's like, just go home. It's fine. I'm going to go back to my home and look for food. You go back to your parents' house. They could have easily just said, okay, sweet, you let us off the hook. Nobody will say anything to us. Nobody will start protests or riots in the street if we leave you. Like, this is a small moment. It's an easy choice. Peace out. Like, I'm gone. I'm going back home. I'm taking the easy road out. You realize by not doing that, what these girls are saying is that they will go to this foreign land with a new family, with no husband, no kids, no promise of food, or even that they'll survive. They'd be in a new culture with new people and a new God. Everything would be foreign to them. Literally, they would give up their entire life, everything they knew, their whole identity of who they were, and say, I'm giving that up, and I'm going to follow my mother-in-law to this completely new life. Completely foreign life to me. Have a brand new identity as I follow her and just leave my whole life behind. This wasn't a small ask. This was a big choice. But it was just a little moment. Because they could have easily just said, okay, thanks for letting us go and just gone back home. And I think most people would have taken that easy route. It's logical, right? It makes sense. Like, that's the thing we should do. That's the smart choice. You go home. But look what happens. And they said to her, no, we will return with you to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait until they're grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters. It's exceedingly bitter for me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She's like, look, you can't stay with me. You got to go home. She's basically pushing them home. She's like, what are you going to do if you go with me? Never get married again? Never have kids? Can't wait for me to have kids. Like, they're going to be like, you're going to be really old by the time I had new kids and you can marry them. It'd just be weird. She's like, just go home. Just go home. She gave them every possible out they needed. They could have so easily just taken it. And you know what? They cry. They kiss her and they weep because they don't want to leave her. It's this beautiful relationship that they're committed to, this loyalty that they feel to their mother-in-law. It says, then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, and Ruth clung to her. She says, thank you. You let me off the hook. I'm going to go home. That should have made it even easier for Ruth to say, okay, like, even she's gone, you know? She went first. I don't even have to be the first one to do it. Now I could just follow her example and go. Isn't it easier when someone else takes the easier road around you? Your friends are all kind of like making the wrong choice. It's easier for you to make the wrong choice because like they led the way. Let's just follow the crowd. Ruth could have done that. She could have just taken off. But look what happens. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts me from you. And then Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her. She said no more. This is an awesome moment. Because it's a bigger thing than just a mother-in-law and a daughter. You see, Ruth wasn't just following her mother-in-law. She was. But it was bigger than that. Ruth is following a new God. Ruth has realized who God is and says, your God will be my God. And she even says, by his name, I swear this. Like she has taken God to heart and believed in him and trusted in him in a way where when she follows Naomi, she's not just following a lady. She's following God who's called her to a new life. And the reason why that's so beautiful to me is because it's a picture of the gospel. It's a picture of what each of us do when Jesus comes along and we say, I'll follow you, right? We're saying, wherever you go, I'll go, Jesus. And wherever you stop and lodge, like I'll stop there. Like this journey home, as you stop and place your tent, wherever you place your tent, and I have to be patient and wait, I'm going to be patient and wait. Jesus, I'm not going to rush you in my life. I'm not going to run out and chase these dreams and tell you to give me whatever it is I'm trying to do. I'm going to stop and say, I'm going to wait here with you. And I'm going to go when you say go. I'm going to wait when you say wait. She's basically saying my whole life, the old one, I'm leaving it behind. I'm stepping out onto the edge of this waterfall and my toes are over the edge and I'm going to jump. My whole body's going. I'm going all in. I'm not going to hold back a little bit. I'm not going to dab my toes in the water. Like I'm leaving the whole thing behind and taking a jump and I'm going. And that's what she had to do to follow her mother-in-law. And you know what? That's what Jesus has called us to do. Not many Christians get that today. Not many churches preach that anymore. That when Jesus says he wants you, he wants all of you. He doesn't want your toe to dip in the water. He wants you to take the jump. He wants you to say, I'm going to leave my language and my family and my everything I know behind, and I'm going to follow you into this brand new life. Sin can stay back there. The old me, the old identity, it can stay back here. Jesus, I'm going with you. I'm going to be a new person and have a new identity, and I'm following you. You will have all of me. Let's go. Try and stop me from following you. And that's basically what Ruth was saying. Try and stop me. You can't get me to stay. You can't get me to go back home. I'm giving up my old life, and I'm taking on this brand new life in you, with you. I just wonder tonight how many Christians in this room have had that conversation with Jesus. How many of you tonight would say that you're ready to take that jump? How many tonight would say that's how you're living in your relationship with Jesus? You've left that old life and said, lead me wherever we're going. I don't even care where we're going. I just want to follow you. I want you to be my identity. I want to be transformed and look like you, Jesus. Are you willing tonight to follow God? Are you willing to be all in with your whole life? So many of us are willing to say, hey, I'm willing to give God my dreams and ask him to help me fulfill them. Help me to live a good life, a comfortable life. Help me to succeed, you know? And I'll bring those prayer requests and put them before God and say, here you go. Make it happen, God. But what we're seeing tonight is different. It's not tell God what to do and trust him to do it. It's say, God, what should I do? Where are we going? God, I'm trusting you to make the plans, you to lead the way, and I'm going to follow. And you know that's tricky. That's hard because sometimes you don't know what the destination is. Some of you guys here tonight, you're like, man, I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my future. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do tomorrow. I haven't heard God speak to me and tell me these like big plans he has for me. You could start off by listening. Your first step could be asking him, God, what is it? You're like, Rob, I'm no big leader. I'm not someone who's just going to go get all these people to follow me and do this crazy thing. I don't think anyone's saying that tonight. I'm just saying, will you take that step behind Jesus and say, look, I'm all in. I don't know what I'll do, what I'll accomplish. I don't know if it'll be big or small, but in this little moment that maybe it's just a humble moment sitting in your youth group in a little building where the screens don't work, maybe God's like, I got a really big choice for you tonight. And you don't think it's a big deal right now. You just think it's another Wednesday night. Maybe in this small moment, God has a huge choice that you'll make. I'll talk to you 10 years from now, and you'll tell me the story of the unbelievable work God did. It wasn't your plan. It wasn't your vision. It wasn't your dream. You just said, okay, I'm going where you go. Try to stop me, God. I'm following Jesus. Wherever that might take me, tonight I'll start off with a little choice by saying yes. Maybe some of you guys tonight, you just need to say yes. You just need to take that step to go, God, I'll follow. It might be a small thing on your sports team where you'll just stand up and be a leader. It might seem like a really small moment that could turn out into a really big choice. God uses you to lead your entire team closer to Jesus or your group of friends. Or maybe at your own home, among your family, your brothers and sisters, your parents. Maybe he'll take you onto a school campus where you'll think it's just this small thing, but because you're still like, hey, God, I'm going to follow you today. I don't know what today's going to look like. I don't know who I'm going to talk to. I don't know what's going to happen, but today I follow you. In every class, in every hallway, in every conversation in the lunchroom, Jesus, I'm following you. Just do what you want to with me. Would you be willing to say that tonight? Would you be willing to look at God and say, let's go? I'm all in. I don't know if you guys have heard of C.S. Lewis. Some of you guys might have heard of him, but C.S. Lewis has some really awesome stuff he says from Scripture. And he has a quote I want to read to you as I close tonight. I'll close with this. He says, Christ says, give me all. I don't want this much of your time and this much of your money and this much of your work. I want you. I've not come to torment your natural self, but to kill you. And you're like, whoa, what? And what he's saying is he hasn't come to just take little pieces of you enough to annoy you or make you uncomfortable. He wants your old self gone. He wants to give you a brand new identity and a brand new life. He wants the sin nature and the brokenness killed and destroyed and left behind like Ruth when she said, I'm leaving that old life and I'm going to follow you. Some of y'all tonight, you're trying to hold on to that old self and keep it alive. You're like giving it mouth to mouth and you're doing everything you can to hold on to the old identity of who you were and your brokenness and your sin. You don't want to let it go. Like, Jesus, you know, just take a little piece of it. Here, you can have this piece. And then you're over here trying to work and keep it alive. And he's like, no, I want it dead. I came to crucify that. I came to get rid of that. I came to give you a brand new identity. And some of us just can't let go. I'm going to challenge you tonight. Let go. Stand on that cliff and have your toes over the edge and say, Jesus, I am all in. Try to stop me. I am following you. Will you bow your heads and close your eyes with me for just a minute? Would you take just a second and ask the Lord if he would talk to you and just show you what areas of your life do you need to go all in? Like, what are the parts that you're trying to keep on life support and keep going? And he's asking you just to put it to death and say, follow me.